Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Hello and welcome to the Betches Up Podcast. I'm Brian Russell Smith.
I'm Amanda Zuberman.
And the Betches Up Podcast is your bi-weekly rundown of all the crazy shit that's happening in the news, explained by your two funniest friends.
Which is us.
Today we're talking about...
Megxit.
Iran strikes back.
And are Republicans turning on Donald Trump?
Let's get into it.
Betches Media presents...
Like beer? I don't know if you do.
Okay.
You like beer, Senator, or not?
Mom, I want a vape.
Nude pictures of Trump.
Come on now.
Don't mess with me.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
How dare you?
What a week. Welcome back, Brian. Two in a row.
Thank you. Of course. I'm happy to
do it. Brian saved the day. We almost didn't have a podcast today because I don't understand calendars.
You could have just done it by yourself.
That's true. I was honestly thinking, I was thinking of all the things we would do. And I was like, I think I would do it by myself, or maybe have Chris come in, or we'd do it like tomorrow.
Get like an AI simulation.
Right. Yeah, just like two of me.
And like have it type it into Siri and just like press play on like, and be like, good point, Amanda.
That honestly sounds ideal. Yes. No, I'm just kidding. I love you guys.
Amanda, what is getting you through this week in Trump's America?
I mean, is there any question? No. Getting me through this week in Trump's America are a handful of royals. Mm-hmm. Meghan and Harry are quitting the royal family. Wow. Are you into royals? You watch. I'm starting to get into it and understanding why it's really fun to know about. And I think you've been there because you're the one. You watch The Crown.
I watch The Crown. I am more interested in like the history of like royal families, like Elizabethan times.
Yeah.
But like not the current Elizabeth, but like, you know what I mean?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I guess so.
Yeah.
Sometimes like I don't really get the appeal.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah.
But this
yeah.
is a fun story.
I mean, like, I feel like I'm also watching The Bachelor this season. I'm engaging in a lot of escapism because I feel like I have no choice at this point. It's just I need to take care of myself.
Yes.
But so Meghan Markle and Prince Harry announced Wednesday that they will be stepping back as senior royals to create a progressive new role within the institution. They plan to balance their time between the UK and North America while working to become financially independent through working on their new charitable entity, most likely. Mm-hmm. They had just returned from a six-week sabbatical in Canada. And earlier that day before this crazy announcement, I got a news alert that was like, they might move to Canada.
Yeah. Which is part of the Commonwealth.
Yeah, right.
So I guess like they're like, we're not moving to the States, but like,
Got it. Yeah, I feel like they would like move to like Vancouver, so they're still close to her mom, who I think lives in California.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, but huge move. I mean, this seems unprecedented, crazy, wild, shocking. Mm-hmm. Did you see the response from Buckingham Palace?
I saw like a tidbit of it, but I haven't seen the full one.
There is only a tidbit.
Yeah, what is it?
They seemed completely... So apparently Harry and Meghan didn't give them a formal announcement, which is crazy. To me. Discussions with the Duke and this is from Buckingham Palace. Discussions with the Duke and Duchess of Sussex are at an early stage. We understand their desire to take a different approach, but these are complicated issues that will take time to work through.
So it seems like this is like so they can't express how they really feel, but this is like we are.
That is what
livid.
I was thinking. That was what I was thinking. Is like they presumably are not supposed to show emotion how they respond to things. Like you know when you are mad about something and you're gonna send an email and you're like, just wait an hour and maybe I'll be less mad.
It's like a per my last email, passive aggressive.
But they couldn't even wait the hours. They were just like, it's complicated.
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, it makes sense. You know, you could see, Meghan Markle recently spoke to had that ITV interview.
Right.
And you could see that she was like going through it.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, the press in the UK are fucking monsters
and
to
racist,
her.
Yeah.
And racist. Like, and I just couldn't imagine, like, you know, for her mental health, how she could possibly stick with it for the rest of her life.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Like, and I can't imagine, like, people are framing it. Like, I saw a tweet, and I'm sure this is a common sentiment by Piers Morgan, who I'm sure most of his sentiments are not general, but saying, like, she took him away from his brother. She dragged him away from the royal family. Give the man some credit. Like, he's a grown-ass man, even though he's not financially independent.
Yeah.
He can make his own decisions.
I mean, Prince William kind of seems like an asshole.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm sorry if you're not supposed to say that about a real person.
Right.
But, you know, there's all those, like, talks of him having an affair. And, really? You know, and, yeah, there was, like, that whole big thing. And, like, they're not allowed to report on it. And even though everyone in the UK knows
Ooh,
that
I've
he's, like,
that.
Cheated on Kate Middleton a bunch of times with this, like, one chick.
It's like the Jay-Z of...
Yeah. And, you know... And then they were, like, using Meghan, apparently, as, like, a distraction from that. Mm. Like, you can't report on this,
so
but go in on Meghan Markle because right. she's just an American. Who cares?
Yeah. And, I mean, I think for Harry, like, this is the media environment that killed his mother.
Yeah.
Like, and he has said that he suffers from anxiety because of it. Like, and he said that explicitly when he spoke out after Markle sued the mm-hmm. newspaper that printed, like, letters from her dad.
Yeah.
But yeah, watching The Crown, like in the early seasons when like King Edward steps back and his brother's like, it's country before all.
Yeah.
And you can totally see that's how they're mm-hmm. reacting to this. And Harry clearly is like prioritizing his own life and his own family.
Well, and also, you know, you would think that Buckingham Palace would welcome this distraction because of all the shit
right.
going on with Prince
right.
Andrew. But they're more like... They're like pissed off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like Meghan Markle and Prince Harry are probably like, we don't want to be associated with an institution that accepts
yeah.
pedophiles.
Right.
Like, we have a child. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's
Meghan Markle is a boss. I mean,
yeah.
she just, the subtle ways that she sort of plants her wokeness and everything that she does
mm-hmm.
is amazing. And she never lets the public forget that she is a black woman. And I think that's amazing.
Yeah. And now, I guess, also with, you know, Prince William and Kate Middleton. I said I wasn't interested, and here I am,
yeah,
like
yeah.
spewing out all these facts.
Facts.
Well, facts.
Yeah.
Hard facts. And because, you know, now he's not really in succession for the throne
at all. I asked Elise this morning.
Yeah.
I was like, so what happens if something crazy happens? So next in line is Charles.
Yes.
What happens where something, I mean, these people are indestructible and live forever.
Yeah.
But something tragic happens to Charles. William assumes something tragic happens to Will, and George is still a baby.
George would still become king.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he would still become king.
I know that
king
sounds so ignorant, but still the idea of a child king is
yeah, I mean,
the
like,
West is
they
crazy.
Would, like, they may, like, hold off his coronation until he's
right.
older.
And then Kate would be, like, a queen regent, I think.
Something yeah. like that. And then if anything happened to George, then yeah. it'd be Charlotte. And then after Charlotte,
yes.
it's the other one. I forget his name.
Louis.
So like he's like far removed at this point.
I was just imagining
now.
Like a comedy where like 20 years from now Harry gets like plucked out of Vancouver where he like runs a dispensary or something and is like sir your time is now.
He grows a beard.
Totally.
It's like and then no it's like it's Prince Diaries with Archie.
Right.
And it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
The recreation
oh my God, the Prince
of
Diaries, totally.
Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, Archie is going to be the most
He's probably going to be so handsome, too.
Oh, my God. Totally. He's so cute.
He's such a cute little babe.
But, yeah, I'm happy for them. It's crazy. I'm sorry. I know we have a lot of UK listeners, and I'm curious how you guys feel. I didn't want to mm-hmm. be like, there was so much amazing content and memes about it yesterday.
Yeah.
I was loving it. And, you know, I don't know if it's, like, callous to sort of revel in it or if it's kind of a tragedy for people, even if they knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really curious what
I wonder if it. I wonder if it wouldn't have been so, like, exciting. And, like, great if, like, everything else had been so terrible.
Right.
You know
oh
what
my
I mean?
God, I
like,
know. Right.
Oh, so some, like, kind of news that doesn't really matter, right. but it is very salacious.
Yeah. Right. Right. But looks like there's a lot more news that will come out of this. So it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll start their own reality show.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Right. Right. Like Nick Lachey and Jessica Simpson.
Yeah. I can see him, like, growing a beard.
Totally.
And just, like, living in the mountains.
Right. Right. Yeah. Good for them.
Yeah.
TBD.
Mm-hmm.
What's getting you through?
Well, so... Elizabeth Warren this past week, it seems like she's on like a whole media blitz.
Yeah.
She's been everywhere. She's been on Rachel Maddow. She's been, you know, on Morning Joe. She just did Pod Save. She missed our, I guess we just had
yeah,
some.
Yeah, so weird.
I guess
I
we just
know.
Had some scheduling
Maybe
conflicts.
We'll check our spam. Maybe
yeah.
she sent something.
Yeah, she must have reached out. We must have missed that email. She couldn't make the podcast.
Yeah.
But then she was also on The View. I would say The View is one of my odd guilty pleasures.
Yeah.
I really get some sort of weird satisfaction about out of it. Maybe it's because of like Joy Behar being like ridiculous and Whoopi Goldberg being Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah, but I think it's also useful to watch because those are a lot of people watch it and
yeah.
the perspectives they have either inform other people's perspectives or just generally reflect like they're all pretty they're all sharp women.
Yeah,
but
totally.
They do ask the questions that sometimes you feel dumb about asking, and then you actually get like a real answer and a real debate. What people are really thinking.
Yeah, I would say there are sharp with maybe one exception or two, but specifically Meghan McCain.
Yeah,
Meghan McCain gives me, I don't know what it is about her. She fills me with so much disdain.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, I kind of liked her because I was like, oh, she's Republican, but she's like a conservative and she's not like a crazy Trump person.
Yeah.
That has like long since
passed.
I think
she's also benefit just from like the increased canonization of her father over the past couple of years.
Totally.
Which is obviously well earned. Everyone knows she's always their compilations of her. My father.
I have, and you know, I have a big issue with dynastic nepotism.
Of course.
And she is a huge.
Who doesn't?
She's a huge beneficiary of dynastic nepotism because even like John McCain's fathers were like huge generals, like mm-hmm. father and grandfather in the United States Army. So even him is mm-hmm. a product, mm-hmm. even he is a product of nepotism. Like, she always talks about how she was an intern at SNL. Like, you don't get the fucking internship, like, unless you're, like, well-connected
it's a funny
or, like...
thing to refer to, excuse me, now, because, like...
She always does. She's like, well, she's like, I was part of the liberal establishment once when I was 21.
This is basically Weekend Update.
For one semester, I worked as an intern at SNL. Anyways, she bothers me. So Warren went on The View to discuss Trump's impeachment trial in the Senate and his decision to order an airstrike on Iran and her wealth tax. So Warren was trying to explain that tax, which I will let her explain, I think she does in this clip. And so while discussing and laying out the specifics of her plan, she accepts a question from Joy Behar and Sonny Hoyston, but she kind of just like ignores Meghan McCain's rude interruptions. I think we have that clip.
Universal child care for every baby in this country aged 0 to 5. Universal pre-K. $800 billion into our public schools. Make it a real commitment.
Can we just switch
Universal gears? College, $50 billion for historically black colleges and universities.
But I think
and cancel student loan debt for 43
well,
years.
Well, that's great.
When Trump just said
really
that
quick.
We spent $2 trillion on the military, I said, I don't want anyone ever to ask Elizabeth Warren how she's going to pay for medical care.
There you go.
It's so funny to listen to, like without the visual, even more, because it's like you're like I think Elizabeth Warren is just like 2% tax on assets over $50 million, and this is what you all get.
She accepts interruptions from Joy and Sunny.
Uh-huh.
Not even interruptions; they were more questions because they were asking questions about what she was talking about. Whereas it sounded like Meghan just wanted to switch gears.
Yeah, she's like, but I think what Joy is asking.
Right.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. But so thanks to the Meghans for getting us through this week.
Yeah.
The Meghan M's.
Yeah. Meghan squared.
Yes.
Should we do the main news?
I guess.
Yeah.
What do you guys think we're going to talk about?
Oy vey.
More Iran. Iran strikes back on Tuesday night. Iran launched 22 ballistic missiles at 2 Iraqi air bases, including the Al-Assad air base. This is the one that Trump had like called out and tweeted about, saying after the Iraqi parliament said voted to kick us out of their country, was like, we're not going to leave until you pay for these beautiful things we built you, including this base. As soon as I heard that was the same base, I was like, did he just put a target on that base? Like, maybe he should stop going on TV and saying, here are all my favorite things in the Middle East that I really hope you don't touch.
And it's like we invaded that country and built that base. It's not like
they didn't ask us to.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what happened.
We fought to give the Iraqis their democracy, and now vote us out of here.
Yeah. The attacks killed no Americans or Iraqis. Both of those at this point are confirmed. Iran immediately took responsibility. One of their state medias said that they had killed dozens of Americans, which definitely seemed like a message for Iranians, not for us.
So like maybe like placate some Iranians.
Right. Trump was going to speak that night. He obviously did not. He took the podium the next day. How did that night go down? So that night we started hearing from the Pentagon that they suspected that this was a deliberate miss, that they didn't want to hit any Americans, which I am of the opinion, and this is not a novel opinion, but I don't tend to freak out about World War III because I really don't think Iran wants war with us. They know they would lose. China and Russia are a different story, but they would lose. And I think that they know that. And that was clear from the attack. So
I mean, it's also speculation because I feel like, did they not pre-warn?
I think they warned Iraq and then Iraq warned us like shortly before. And also we have capabilities like we can sense when missiles are coming. Yeah. So there was presumably some sort of preparation, whether there would have been casualties without that advance notice, however long it was, who knows. But I think today an Iranian official did confirm that they did not intend to kill any Americans. That was the idea. Night of, they went through some diplomatic back channels. Basically, we don't have like really a direct diplomatic relationship with Iran. So we go through these back channels, which are usually other countries. So they went through Switzerland and at least two other countries to sort of communicate to us like, hey, can you tell them we're done? Like, don't go to war with us. This was it. This was specifically in retaliation for Soleimani.
Yeah.
This is all we are going to do.
Yeah.
And if this were homeland, I'd be like, but what if they were just throwing us off? But like I said, they're not like, it's Iran. It's not ISIS, of course.
Yeah.
Like it's a sovereign nation with a government. They don't have a death wish. They don't. Yeah.
And I was at the gym when they were like breaking missiles launch at Iran, and I was like running on the treadmill and I'm like looking at everyone. I like immediately go to the news on my phone and I'm like listening. And I'm like, how
it was
is that?
Really scary.
I was fucking terrified. And I was looking around and I'm like, what is everyone doing? Look, right. Pay attention. Everyone was just like doing their like little cardio things, like listening to K-pop. And I was like, people, stop what you're doing and listen to the news.
I know. I was going to go to Target, but then I wanted to watch. And then I was like, I don't want to go to Herald Square right now.
Yeah. That's fair. I've been asking because I know that Sammy like bought a bunch of like non-perishables.
Yeah.
I'm like, I really want to do that. And I keep talking to my boyfriend about it. And he's like, you're ridiculous. We'll be fine. I'm like, that's what you say now.
Yeah, right.
I can't wait to tell you. Mike says the same thing.
Mike's always like, I mean, worst comes to worst, we would be on, you know, maybe we wouldn't have our favorite food to eat for like a couple days, but you would live.
I think about ATMs.
Like,
and like if they shut down the credit cards, how do you pay for anything?
Right.
Are we going to barter? I don't understand.
No, I don't have cash in my house.
I have none.
No.
I have none.
I don't have cash in my checking account.
Yeah, no.
Certainly not in my
house. I am not liquid.
Right. Oh, God. So the next morning, as we know, Trump spoke. He said Iran appears to be standing down, which is true. So he said something true and confirmed that there were no American casualties. He said that there wouldn't be a military response, but that he would impose further sanctions, which is sort of what caused Iran to start provoking us, which led to all of this in the first place. Double down on punishing its nuclear ambitions and trying to basically constrict their economy and make them suffer to the degree that they perhaps will come back to the nuclear agreement that we have still abandoned. He asked European allies to abandon the Iran deal and work on something new. His main motivation for that is that one basically had like a sunset date. It was going to expire. So, you know, why not? But it's like, if I have a jar of pickles in my house that doesn't expire for 3 years, I'm not really thinking 3 years ahead. Like, I got to put it on my to-do list.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's more serious than that. But it seems like a weak reasoning for why we need, like, now is the time we need to do that before anything settles down. He asked NATO to get more involved in the region, suggesting that the U.S. might want to pull back, which would definitely alarm some of our allies. And Iran did suggest that they might continue attacking our allies in the region, which is usually how they try to provoke us. But that's scary. That includes, you know, the United Arab Emirates, Israel.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of places that obviously don't deserve to like be the targets of our miscalculations.
Yeah. That speech was wild. Like, for reasons other than the context.
It was really difficult. It was he was really shaken.
He was like, someone counted how many times he sniffed. It was 58 times. They did like a compilation of him going, I'm sorry, you listeners, for listening to that.
Yeah.
And it sounded like he had just learned how to breathe. he wasn't born with the knowledge of how to breathe,
right,
like most people are.
Right.
You know, the reflex.
I was thinking that was because this is probably the first time he's like said that many sequential full sentences.
Yeah.
Like normally he just ad libs and stops and you can take, when you try to like, when you're like, I could sing a song and then you do karaoke and you can't breathe.
Yeah.
That's, I think, what happened.
Because I guess during his rallies, he says something and then people cheer and then he breathes.
Right, exactly.
But like he is just so out of shape and unhealthy that like he's winded after like two sentences.
Yeah. And whatever went down that evening, it didn't have a positive effect on his his vitality.
Yeah, and then what were the words that he messed up again? He was like...
He said, like, tolerated.
And it's funny because that was, like, an important sentence because I kept hearing people play those clips without, like, talking about the fact that he was slurring his speech. And someone else I saw that had said, like, imagine if, like, Hillary Clinton was slurring and sniffing. Yeah, or Obama. It's all everyone will talk about.
But right, because Hillary, Republicans specifically love to speculate about her health.
Yeah, and I mean, she's fine now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of feels like now people are like, okay, it wasn't that bad. We're not at war. Mm-hmm. Everything has sort of gone from a boil back down to a simmer. But I mean, this resulted in Iran fully pulling out of the nuclear deal.
Yeah.
Saying like, we're done. We're going to do whatever we want. Yeah. We're not going to just stay a year away from not whatever they want. Like I said, they don't want war with us. They don't want to cause like a huge problem. I mean, they probably do, but they don't want a full on war with America. They want to continue to provoke us. It resulted in Iraq voting to kick us out of the country. And we'll talk about this later, like maybe taking away these crazy war powers from the president because he proved that he could not handle them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there remain like very serious questions about his authority, whether he is coherent enough to handle something like this. I mean, but also as you know, as he was making his speech the next day, I'm like, is this what gets him reelected? Number one, because there's such low expectations about him that when he doesn't do the most disastrous option available, he is like lauded and is like, this is the best President Trump we've seen.
Mm.
And number two, because Iran says they are stopping here, I feel like it gives them a great campaign message. Like killing Soleimani was correct because it happened. Like they didn't, it didn't start a war. They just struck us this airbase once. And
yeah, well, people also say, you know, Iran will really like, they could play out their retaliation in a much longer due time than, you know, per se, an American administration would. They have, like, longer term goals. Like, they don't have the they don't have the change of power that we have.
That's interesting,
They could be, like, a few years from now, like, do something and be like, oh, well, it's because of Soleimani. Or, like, a few months from now, be like, oh, it was because of that. Because they have the time to placate and figure out the best way for a certain retaliation. So I'm not fully placated at this moment because, you know, like it is just nerve wracking. And, you know, I think Trump apparently had told people that he had watched Tucker Carlson like go against this decision because Tucker Carlson was actually like being like, this is a bad idea. Like, why did you do that?
And killing Soleimani.
Yeah. And like, he was like, and he also brought up the point, but like, well, now we're supposed to believe the intelligence officials. Like, and that's where Trump gets his foreign policy,
right?
Like, advice from is from fucking Fox News. So,
yeah.
Not to say that I like Tucker Carlson,
right?
But a little bit of an agreement on this.
Yeah. And aspect. I mean, Congress definitely isn't ready to move on from this. So there have been like lingering questions about the Trump administration claims that they took out Soleimani. I'm comfortable saying they assassinated him. He was a military leader in a sovereign government, and we assassinated him. And there are laws about that that I think you guys talked about Monday. And a lot of the things that can sort of legitimize something like that are things like an imminent threat. So there's been questions about what intelligence did they have that made them decide that today was the day that they had, that was the day that they had to kill him.
Yeah.
So yes, there's been a number, you know, we've heard lawmakers say like, I heard this. We've heard a number of like Democratic lawmakers say like, I'm not satisfied with what I've heard. But yesterday seemed to be sort of the big briefings. Top Trump cabinet officials, including Gina Haspel, who runs the CIA, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien, and Defense Secretary Mark Esper, briefed members of the House and Senate in separate briefings, I believe. And Democrats and some Republicans came out of that briefing fuming.
Yeah.
No exaggeration. They were fuming.
Yeah.
Let's just hop in and listen to what Republican Senator Mike Lee of Utah had to say about it.
The briefing lasted only 75 minutes, whereupon our briefers left. This, however, is not the biggest problem I have with the briefing, which I would add was probably the worst briefing I've seen, at least on a military issue, in the 9 years I've served in the United States Senate. What I found so distressing about that briefing was that one of the messages we received from the briefers was, do not debate, do not discuss the issue of the appropriateness of further military intervention against Iran. And that if you do, you'll be emboldening Iran. I find this insulting and demeaning, not personally, but to the office that each of the 100 senators in this building happens to hold. It is not acceptable for officials within the executive branch of government, I don't care whether they're with the CIA, with the Department of Defense, or otherwise, to come in and tell us that we can't debate and discuss the appropriateness of military intervention against Iran. It's un-American, it's unconstitutional, and it's wrong. Every time they pull a stunt like this, I'm willing to consider and introduce any and every War Powers Act resolution.
Wow.
Yeah, that's intense. That's immediately after. Rand Paul, a Republican, also said it was trash. Those two Republicans actually had previously voted to curtail Trump's ability to go to war. This is something that Congress has been looking at all year as tensions have escalated. So what else do we know about what happened in the briefing? Like I said, it was short.
It was short. The attendees said CIA Director Gina Haspel refused to answer whether Soleimani posed any imminent threat to the U.S. She told them to just read the report. Sounds like read the transcript. And they said that the administration basically knew nothing and I couldn't tell them anything about that the American people didn't already know. They're members of Congress. They're supposed to know more than us. They were apparently evasive, and one lawmaker said they gave a window in which there might be an imminent attack that was so large it could barely be considered imminent. So, like, there might be an imminent attack in a year.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if it was a year, but it's just like,
yeah,
imminent. But it's like, it's not imminent if it's basically, it sounded like what we had heard earlier this week from lawmakers that, like, yeah, there was intelligence, but it's never great news with Iran. We always have intelligence that there could be attacks.
Well, we even, like, this week we have seen them change their talking points about it. You know, Mike Pompeo came out and said we believe there was an imminent threat.
Yeah.
Our intelligence officers have told us there was one. And then they sort of walked that back. And then they were like, well, there wasn't an imminent attack being planned. But we still had to do this. And it's like, well, why? And then they're like flip-flopping. Like, they are never...
The real reason, and apparently they spend a lot of time in there, is just explaining, like, how dangerous Iran is and all the shit they've pulled over the years. But it's like, that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah.
They, like, shushed lawmakers when they had questions. They ignored questions. The point of the thing is to answer questions. They wouldn't answer questions. And this is terrifying. This is people who know why we killed this man not saying... we just felt like it, or we just wanted to.
And I mean, even that would be better, just so we fucking knew.
Exactly. I mean, there are some people out there saying he was people calling him a terrorist, saying he shouldn't be on this earth.
So, like, should we be worried, or should we not be worried? It's basically what, like, I would like to know. It's like, do we have to worry about an imminent attack? Or that word is so hard to say, by the way.
Imminent attack.
Imminent.
Yeah.
I feel like I keep fucking it up. But, it's we deserve the right to know. And if we don't have the right to know, at least, like, members of Congress should have the right to know.
Well, especially so Mike Pence responded to these criticisms coming out of the briefing. And he basically said, like, you know, the administration has to keep some things close. We can't tell you everything because it's sensitive. It could compromise sources and methods. So he was claiming that, like, I hear you, but, like, the most compelling evidence we have, we just can't show you. That's literally, like, the opposite of the point of telling. Like, there is nothing that you can't share with the Gang of Eight.
Yeah.
The Gang of Eight is made up of the Speaker of the House, the House Minority Leader, Senate Majority Leader, Minority Leader, as well as the chairs and ranking members of both the Senate Committee and the House Committees for Intelligence. So, like, the Adam Schiffs and the Devin Nunes, and then from the Senate too. Those eight people, that exact term, that doesn't just refer to, like, that term means the people that get clued in on the intelligence.
Yeah.
It's also waved around as, like, the eight most powerful people, but the origin of the term is that the executive branch tells these people what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing you can't tell them. That's the point of them.
Yeah.
So this is really kind of terrifying.
Well, it's just, like, clear that, you know, the executive branch really does not, you know, take into account the Constitution when they make decisions, because, you know, there are three equal branches of government, and they do not view Congress as a co-equal branch of government. And it's scary, because that's why we live in that's what a democracy is, you know. That's why, you know, you leave monarchy, because the the king had the authority to go to war, and we felt that the king should not have the authority to go to war. It's like, we don't need one person's ego dictating military action and the loss of lives. It's crazy.
Right. And not only is the president not the only person in charge, but going to war specifically is something that the Constitution gave Congress the authority to decide. Yeah. So this week, the House is kind of like, let's remind people that it's our job. Since 9/11, there has been sort of this degradation of Congress's ability to sort of intervene in how the president starts war type activities.
Yeah.
And this week, the House is sort of looking at that again. Today, specifically, the House will vote on a war powers resolution to kind of rein in his power to pursue military action in Iran and elsewhere, but mostly Iran. The announcement that they would do so actually came right after this briefing. I think it was sort of being discussed, but that seemed like a pretty ripe moment to announce it. Mm-hmm. Nancy Pelosi said that members of Congress have serious urgent concerns about the administration's decision to engage in hostilities and its lack of strategy moving forward. So the resolution that they are looking at this week refers specifically to Trump's ability to take military action against Iran, as I said. If successful in the House and Senate, the resolution would force Trump to end hostilities against Iran unless Congress authorizes war, or again, to thwart an imminent attack or threat. Like Mike Lee said that he went in on that undecided, but came out of it being pretty convinced that Trump can't handle wartime powers. Congress has the sole power to declare war, but since 2001, they have sort of ceded that over time. And Trump and his administration have used some of these 2011 authorization acts. There are two. There are 2001 and 2002. They're kind of too specific. The distinction is that one refers more to terrorism and one refers more to the Iraq war.
Yeah. And you said this is like mostly in response because of September 11th.
It was 3 days after.
Yeah.
That they authorized the 2001 authorization for the use of military force.
Fucking
over the
Dick
years,
Cheney.
I know, over the years, a number of like House members have tried to repeal this because it's used. I mean, Bush used it, Obama used it as sort of a justification. They basically can just manipulate their arguments to say, like, we were going after a terrorist by doing this. A lot of people are calling Soleimani a terrorist.
Yeah.
I had used that phrasing in one thing and heard from a lot of Iranians saying that that was not a correct way to characterize it.
Well, I mean, he is deemed a terrorist
yes, that's true.
Standards. And also,
that's an important point.
Well, it's also perhaps why, you know, Mike Pence posted that tweet that was so factually inaccurate.
Yeah.
Saying like, you know, oh, the Iranians like harbored some of the terrorists, the 12 terrorists who took our hijackers who took part in 9/11, where there was like actually like 15.
Yeah.
And none were Iranian.
Right. Right. Or the report. Yeah. It's that there's literally no evidence that that happened. So lawmakers came out of the briefing. Basically, in that briefing, they were trying to use that 2002 authorization, which refers to the Iraq war. And so people came out of that like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Does assassinating Iran's military general have to do with the Iraq war? And, you know, nobody really explained this better than Republican Senator Rand Paul after the briefing and sort of described why it's absurd to apply these old authorizations to this scenario.
You know, it's an insult to the Constitution. The Constitution said the power to declare war was to be given to Congress. They specifically did not give that power to the president. In the briefing and in public, this administration has argued that the vote to topple Saddam Hussein in 2002 now applies to military action in Iraq. That is absurd. Nobody in their right mind with a straight face, with an ounce of honesty, can argue that when Congress voted to go after Saddam Hussein in 2002, that authorized military force against an Iranian general 18 years later. If we need to be at war, we debate it in the open, in public, and we have a public vote in the Senate and the House. That's the way you go to war.
Preach.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to hear them talk about, you know, to talk about, you know, the appropriate, you know, paths to certain things that Congress has the right to when, you know, they're facing an impeachment trial.
I know.
Where they congressionally approved a budget for Ukraine and it was being withheld
right
by the executive branch. So you think, so maybe they'll, do we think that they'll take that thought process to the trial?
I mean, right now there are three, I guess there's Lee. So this will go through the House.
Yeah.
They were going, this doesn't include a repeal of the 2001 or the 2002 war authorizations. many lawmakers, specifically Representative Barbara Lee of California, she was the only congressperson. It was 3 days after 9/11 to vote against this, basically saying this authorization, saying the president can do whatever he wants in the Middle East if he thinks that there's a threat that is connected to what happened 3 days ago. The only one. And since then, year after year, she tries to repeal these. Mm-hmm. And it never works. It'll get through the House. It won't get through the Senate because usually one or the other is not controlled by the same. They were going to include language in this War Powers Resolution they're going to vote on today to repeal the 2002 one that they're using to justify this attack. Because it's probably easier to argue for the president can choose to undertake operations to take out terrorists than you can understand why that's a right that he should have to specifically that are threats to Iraq, because people are sick of this war. People are sick of this. And especially the fact that he would use this to justify what happened is crazy. But they dropped the language in today's bill about the 2002 authorization because they knew it wouldn't make it through the Senate. And this has happened before. They once passed a version that did repeal it and it never made it through the Senate. This also probably won't make it through the Senate, but who knows? I mean, we have these senators, two, that's two. It takes four.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see.
And just to add to that, Pelosi is still sort of, she's been saying, like, I still want to look into repealing that. It's just not really what we're doing today. This is just a sort of clean war powers resolution. So we'll update you guys on how that vote went on Monday. But yeah, one more thing. Speaking of impeachment.
Yeah, so I think it looks like things are finally beginning to move forward. Before the holidays, Nancy Pelosi said she would hold off on sending the articles of impeachment to the Senate until she knew more about, like, what the trial would look like. Mitch McConnell was like, okay, whatever, we don't want them anyway. But she hoped to pressure him to be more fair because he wants to get this over with. Because it's clear to me now, watching Mitch McConnell's actions and Senator Lindsey Graham's, is that all they really care about is their own reelection.
Yeah.
And so I feel like they just want, and they think that they can, like, pitch their ride to Donald Trump's election in 2020.
Right, right. So they all just want to get this done with and get him acquitted. And the longer she holds a trial hostage, I feel like I'm talking like a Republican, but I mean, fine. That's kind of what she's doing. I don't care. Yeah. The longer it will take for him to be acquitted. But, like, over the break, so she said before Christmas, I'm going to do this. And then over the break, we had a lot of eventful stuff that, you know, in my view, sort of legitimizes why she held them.
Yeah.
She's still holding them. It seems about time to hand them over. But there was more breaking investigations that exposed emails between people in the administration where they all tried to convince a lot of the people that we haven't heard from yet tried to convince Trump to let the aid flow, people like John Bolton and Mick Mulvaney. Those are people John Bolton wasn't subpoenaed because we knew if they subpoenaed him, he wouldn't come and it would be a protracted court battle. So suddenly, as she was holding on to these, a lot more information came out about what really happened and sort of was like, we really need to hear from these people. After it came out, Mitt Romney was like, I'd like to hear from John Bolton. John Bolton said earlier this week that he would be happy to testify, which, you know, it's unclear if that's because he has information he thinks would exonerate the president or if he has information he thinks that the American people need to hear.
Well, you would think that if he had information that would exonerate the president, he would A, just release it.
Right.
Or B, they would pressure him. Mitch McConnell would be like, okay, then yes, we should subpoena John Bolton.
Right.
I, like, won't really, like, hold my breath for anything John Bolton will do. He's the one that wrote, like, 10,000 troops to Venezuela on, a post-it.
Right.
So who knows?
But, I mean, incidentally, the big thing that Democrats wanted from Mitch is a commitment to call witnesses from the beginning of a trial, namely those four witnesses. So that's what they've been discussing with him, what Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, has been discussing with him. And it sort of looked like maybe they were having an effect by giving, you know, the moderate Republican senators some time to think about and come forward to say, hey, I don't like this. Maybe I would vote to have some sort of rules include a commitment to bringing witnesses, like people like Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski all came out and said, I don't really love how Mitch is handling this. I think we should all be neutral.
Yeah.
Romney said, I want to hear from Bolton. So for a minute, it was like, all right, there are three that might vote that we want witnesses. But then this week, Mitch McConnell said, no, I have all the votes I need to just set the rules now and decide later if we're going to have witnesses.
It's interesting because Susan Collins recently said something where it's like, it's funny that they want me or want my help for this because Chuck Schumer just poured a bunch of money into my competitor's race in for the Senate. It's like, oh,
so way to put politics like blatantly in it. It obviously is political, but
it's like you really so it is political. It's like it isn't about like upholding your oath to the Constitution. It's about you winning re-election. Who, by the way, is running for their fucking fifth term as a senator in Maine? She wants to be a senator for 30 years?
Right.
That doesn't seem right. We need term limits on these people. That's crazy. This old woman who like can't stop shaking needs to like be like not allowed to run five times. Not just her, anyone. You know what I mean? Like we don't need octogenarians or whatever?
Octogenarians. Unless they're Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah. I mean, even then, come on. But we like, I love Nancy, but you know.
Yeah. It's a lot of very, very old white people in charge.
A lot of very old white people in charge. And, you know, there's probably a lot of young, not white people who could probably do the job better.
Right. Yeah. So likely this week, what will we see for impeachment? We'll likely see the Senate, because Mitch says that he has what he needs to set the rules right now. They will likely adopt rules very similar, if not identical, to the rules used in Clinton's impeachment trial, which passed unanimously and also decided to call, like, whether or not we decide witnesses, call witnesses is going to come later. And so Republicans are really shilling, like, look, we're basically doing what you guys did then. But there's a huge difference because there was a 2-year investigation before the Clinton impeachment trial. Mm-hmm. They had heard, it was kind of like they had heard from everyone. So there wasn't this question of like, well, we still have 4 people that the president refuses, is ordering not to speak.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it passed unanimously, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So it's a completely different scenario. It doesn't preclude the possibility of witnesses at all. After like opening arguments and opening statements and sort of cross-examination or however it goes, they'll sort of can bring more emotions. But then still you do need 51 senators. So, you know, is anything going to come out before that time that would really convince like one of those? But you know what? As this is happening, reporting is still being done. I was reading that it's like there's a lot of stuff that can come out that it doesn't necessarily have to change the process at all. It is a foregone conclusion. I think the Democrats' mission should be, you know, don't delay this like crazy, but like it doesn't necessarily just have to be the government that's like exposing it more information right now. The longer this is an active situation, the longer there will be reporting and new investigations and new information that could. Who knows at this point? We always think that the next most damning thing is going to be the thing that prompts Republicans to like observe their constitutional duty. But so.
Well, it's interesting because now you can see that there's polling happening
about the witnesses
and about the impeachment trial in general. And it says here among Americans, 79% of Democrats think the trial should include witnesses, as well as 64% of Republicans. That is a lot. And if you look at it state by state, especially in these competitive Senate race places like Maine, like Colorado, the people on independents, Republicans, and Democrats overwhelmingly want this to be a fair trial. They want there to be witnesses. They want that to be actually, they don't want it to be a party line vote. They want them to look at the facts and make a decision based upon that. And if I was, you know, Cory Gardner in Colorado running for a re-election, I would really question what my next step would be. Like, do I go along party lines in such a swing country or swing state, you know what I mean? Like I would want to do what I felt is right, and I feel like it's easier to argue your position with like a moral authority as opposed to I had to do what Mitch McConnell told me to do.
I feel like there's just so many outs for them. Like they could say this process, we know it's going to happen anyway, so why not just get this done and get back to governing for the American people? Like, that's how I would defend it as a Republican. And if I saw that on a TV ad, I'm a Republican, I'd probably be like, fine.
Yeah, but if you were an independent, I don't know.
That's true. Exactly. Those purple states.
They can't just rely upon a Republican voting for them.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So this morning, Nancy Pelosi said that she doesn't. She's like, I'm not going to hold on to these forever. I'm almost ready. I'll send them soon. Mm-hmm. I think she's just waiting. Now it sounds like the Senate is ready to pass a resolution on how they're going to handle this, after which I think that's when she'll send them through and appoint. She's like, I need to know what this will look like before I decide which house managers to appoint. And usually those, that seems to be part of like formally transmitting the articles.
Yeah.
So I think that there was a slight advantage to holding on to them. We got more information.
Yeah.
But I also think that it was House Democrats who said that we needed to have this happen fast. And we need to move to impeach the president quickly because it's urgent what he's done. And we have an election coming up and we need to show that this was bad. So I don't think she has really the moral authority to prolong this much longer.
And going into this election, Donald Trump will be the first and only president in history have been impeached running for re-election. Cory Booker just came out and said that if it does go to the Senate trial, he thinks it's going to derail his campaign, which I mean, I don't know how much legs your campaign has left anymore. Anyways.
Oh, Cory Booker's campaign. Yeah.
Yeah. Julian Castro dropped out. I think we already said that. And now has endorsed Elizabeth Warren. I don't think we said that last on Monday. And then on Tuesday, Democratic debate. Mm-hmm. Holy shit.
Yep.
Another one.
The last one before the Iowa caucus.
Yeah. Less than a month away.
Yeah.
It's wild. Happening. It is happening.
Yep.
So I'm assuming we'll cover that.
Yeah. The thing that sucks for the senators is that it's not like a grandstanding thing. Like we're all like, oh, I can't wait to see Kamala like shred everybody. They write questions down on a piece of paper and they hand them over and they're not really allowed to talk that much. I think specifically to avoid grandstanding. But it'll be another fun adventure for us here at the SUP.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's it for today. Thank you so much to everyone who submitted a review to win the Apple Watch. It's so helpful when you guys do that. And it's great to read the feedback. It's really productive feedback. And we definitely take what you guys say and implement it. So we have some exciting things happening for this year. That is over. We do have a winner, but you can still win free stuff by participating in our ambassador program. Just check out our Instagram. I'm going to promote it again on the stories, but we also have a highlight. The stickers are great. The stickers are really fun. People love them and you can't buy them. And you just have to refer one friend to the newsletter and your friend, you won't regret it. Your friend will thank you. The newsletter, you guys know, Elise writes it. It makes me laugh every day. Mm-hmm. It's so funny. So we just want to make sure more people have it in their life and know that it's out there for them.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So until the end of democracy, I'm Brian Russell Smith.
I'm Amanda Duberman.
And this has been the Betches Up Podcast. This episode of the Betches Up Podcast is hosted by Amanda Duberman
and Brian Russell Smith. This up is created by Sammy Fishbein.
The show is produced by Amanda Duberman. Our editor is Sean Kilby. Our podcast managers are Mike Coscarelli and Sean Kilby. Social media by Amanda Duberman.
Artwork by Brittany Levine. And be sure to follow us at @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send your emails to sup@Betches.com.
Betches.